give space to the quiet moments of our lives. We use these first moments for lighting candles of memory and hope, or just sit quietly remembering who you are and why you are here. Let us prepare for the unmasking. We come here from many places, seeking many things. Some come for the company or the stimulation. Some bring unspoken joys or pains that need the closeness of others. But beneath it all, we come in the hope that here, somehow, we might catch a glimpse of something enduring, something true, something which can support and nourish us, coax us toward a better life. We come to remove life's masks and our own masks too. And so let us prepare for the unmasking. Amen. Halloween is a holiday that comes to us in drag. It's more true than you might think. It wears a mask and a costume covering a much older mask and costume. And uncovering Halloween is like going on an archaeological dig where we go down through layers put on at different eras, each building on what had come before it, and each one a little more watered down and milder than the original versions. The most recent layer came in 1967 by decree from President Johnson. That's when Halloween officially became UNICEF Day, when little children, sometimes dressed as make-believe goblins, frighten you into making the sacrifice of some spare change. Going back further, Halloween first became a big thing in this country after more than a million people from Ireland emigrated to the U.S. after the Irish potato famine of 1848. At that time, it was the adults rather than the children who dressed up in costumes pretending to be all manner of evil spirits and supernatural beings, and they visited homes where friends made offerings of food and spirits to them. These were liquid spirits. And I've read that the costumes that the Irish used to wear during this festival were almost always cross-dressing, where the males dressed as female characters and the females dressed as male characters. So it was a holiday in drag. But that too was a caricature and a cartoon. Halloween itself is a kind of mask put on over something much older, and it has hidden within it several secrets, which we'll unmask this morning. The Christian Church invented Halloween and All Saints' Day in the 9th century, and then they added All Souls' Day a century later. They were invented to cover an ancient Celtic festival known as Samhain, or Samhain, as they say in this country, in the same way that Christmas was moved to December 25th in the 4th century to cover the pagan Mithraic festivals. December 25th in the old calendar was the winter solstice, and so it was by definition the birthday of all solar deities, just as Sunday was adopted by Christianity in the 4th century to cover the official holy day of solar religions, unlike the Sabbath of Judaism. Our November 1st was the first day of their new year. And for the ancient Celtic people, this was the most magical time of the year. They had only two seasons, summer and winter, light and dark. And for the Celtic people, the darkness was the magical time. It was the time of beginnings because they believed that the dark holds whisperings of secrets that we need to know. That's good psychology. They had great feasts during the 3 days of Samhain. The crops were in, they slaughtered livestock and threw a huge banquet. Afterwards, and after eating all the meat from the livestock, they threw the bones into the blazing fire, partly in thanks for the bounty of that year and partly in anticipation of an even better bounty of crops and livestock the next year. That's why the fires were originally known as bone fires, which we've shortened and turned into a PG rating by calling them bonfires. Above all, Samhain was a time when they believed that, as they said it, the barriers between the human and the supernatural worlds were broken, or as we would say it today, the barriers between the conscious and the unconscious levels are broken. They believed that non-human forces roamed the earth to take revenge for violations of our sacred duties. Nowadays, many of our psychologists would say that's just right. The Irish also believed this was the best time of the year for looking into the future, and they had some wonderful rituals for doing this. Many of these involve apples, which were the sacred fruit of this season for a couple reasons. One was new to me. First, Celtic mythology talked of an enchanted land that lay far across some waters where an apple tree grew in the center with fruit that had magical properties. And they told stories of mythical explorers who traveled across the water to fetch the magical apples. And some say that the Halloween custom of bobbing for apples today is still a faint, distorted echo of that old myth. The other piece, which was new to me, is that if you cut an apple in half crosswise, which I had never in my life done until yesterday, because I didn't believe this, if you cut an apple in half crosswise and look at it, what you find in the center is a pentagram. You find a five-pointed star surrounded by a thin dotted circle. The pentagram is one of the oldest symbols we have. I don't think anyone can claim to know its origins. We've found pentagrams as far back as 5,500 years ago in Mesopotamia. They've been used by many, many cultures. And until the Inquisition, the pentagram was also a common Christian symbol as well. Since the Inquisition, it's been seen as a Wiccan symbol. Now, I want to tell you a few of their ancient rituals for this time, just partly in case you're feeling Celtic this week, but partly because these rituals start showing us some of the secrets buried in Halloween. And the first secret buried in Halloween is the fact that even though this seems to be the time when we're getting in touch with another world and a supernatural world, it's all about this world and this life. And that shows through in these rituals. So does a lot of creative imagination. So listen to these to see what they're really about. First, you can go in to a dark room lit only by a candle or the moon before the stroke of midnight. You turn your back to the mirror and you cut an apple into 9 pieces. You eat 8 and you throw the 9th piece over your left shoulder. Then you turn your head to look over your left shoulder, but the instructions are to let your focus go soft when you do this. And you may find some shapes and patterns that will speak to your intuitive parts, giving you subtle hints to problems that trouble you. Now you tell me which world that's about. It's wonderful. Or go to a boundary creek and get 3 stones from the center of the boundary creek. For reasons I couldn't find out, you have to pick them up like this between your thumb and your middle finger. You put those 3 stones under your pillow. They're called dreaming stones. And then you ask for a dream that will give you guidance or a solution to a problem, and the stones will bring the dream. Third ritual, this is what made me cut that apple that way yesterday. Slice an apple through the equator to reveal the five-pointed star center. Eat the apple by candlelight before a mirror. I didn't do that part. I thought, all right. Candlelight before a mirror, standing in the kitchen. They're close. And I suppose part of the reason I didn't do that part is because then what you get is that your future spouse will appear over your shoulder. Now, that was as scary as I wanted to get. So this is one that shouldn't really be done by everyone. You need to be looking for a future spouse. You don't want to be doing it if you have a current one. Another is to peel an apple, making sure that you get the whole peeling off in one piece. And then you recite this little poem. It says, I pare this apple round and round again, my sweetheart's name to flourish on the plain. I fling the unbroken paring over my head, my sweetheart's letter on the ground to read. So if you let your vision and your focus go soft, you'll be able to make out a letter that will give you a clue to your sweetheart. Or, this is actually the least appetizing of all of them, but I threw it in because it was also the strangest. If you're out of apples, first you have to make sure your fire is completely out. That's very important for this. Then you let a snail crawl through the ashes on your hearth, and the considerate little creature will spell out an initial giving you the clue that you need as it moves. You see what this is and how these are working? These are like psychological Rorschach tests where you can read into ambiguous patterns the sign that you want to see. So it's a way of getting in touch with your unconscious and your desires. So don't think of this as what ancient people used instead of science. It isn't science. Think of it instead as what these ancient people used in place of psychology, because it's pretty good psychology. After all, they wouldn't have been doing it century after century if they didn't think they were getting results. Now, there's a witty little poem called The Grook. I love grooks. They were invented by a Danish poet and inventor and artist in the 60s, and he named them grooks. And he decided that a grook is a wise and witty poem. The name of this poem, and I like it because it explains how these rituals work. The title that he gave to it is A Psychological Grook. It is a little silly, but it's also a little wise. Actually, I don't need to read this. These are the sorts of things I memorize. I can't learn Shakespeare, but I can learn this stuff. Whenever you're called on to make up your mind and you're hampered by not having any, the way to solve the dilemma you'll find is simply by tossing a penny. No, not so that chance shall decide the affair while you're passively standing there moping. But the minute the penny is up in the air, you suddenly know what you're hoping. That's how these work. There's a second misunderstanding about Halloween, a second secret. It looks, for all the world, like the one day of the year when we wear masks and pretend to be something we aren't. If you were here for the Halloween party last night, you saw just how scary you can be. But something's completely wrong about that, because Halloween isn't the only day we wear masks. It's the only day we admit that we're wearing masks. We wear masks every day. And each of us probably has at least a dozen different masks we wear, depending on the occasion. This isn't a bad thing. This is how we get through life. Sometimes we're a spouse or a parent or a friend or an angry driver or a customer. or someone irritated at a phone call. In every role we play every day, we're playing a different role with a different mask. We use a different vocabulary, often a different tone of voice, and a whole different persona that comes out. That's not bad. That's called growing up and understanding how to deal in a complicated world. These words, persona and mask, go back to Greek drama. The Greek characters, when they came on the stage, a very little stage with huge amphitheaters, carried big masks on sticks in front of their faces. And the point was both to hide the identity of the actor and also to reveal something about the character. And persona meant a fake character, something you were not, that you were playing for the show. And that's still what we mean by wearing a mask. It's not necessarily bad, as long as you remember who's wearing what and keep them straight. The danger is if we forget to take the masks off and the masks start playing us. And then we understand the meaning of a saying, like Jesus is saying, when he asks, what does it profit a person if they gain the whole world but lose their soul, lose their core? Now, I remember an old Twilight Zone program about this. This has to exist in ancient myths too, but I don't know any. So if you know some, tell me afterwards. But I remember an old Twilight Zone program about people putting on powerful masks that made them fearful and mean. And they were told they could only leave the masks on a short time, then they had to take them off before it was too late. But it was a very seductive power, and they didn't want to take them off. And in this program, they didn't take them off until it was too late. And it was too late because when they took the mask off, they discovered that the mask had changed their face into its form, and they would be stuck with that look, playing that role the rest of their lives. Now that's scary. So don't think of Halloween as the one day of the year when we get to wear a mask. Think of it as a time when we're asked to be more aware of the masks we wear every day and to see if we still believe those masks serve us or if we're starting to take their shape and serve them. This isn't just for personal masks. It's for all the masks we have and wear. In relationships, in clubs, at work, at church, at parties, all the places we're wearing masks. Not just as individuals, as groups, and as a society. Societies also wear masks. And this is the time of year to ask what the masks are and who's running the show. There are a lot of dimensions we could get into to talk about society. One important one I'm going to save for Veterans Day, to talk about the war in Iraq. But I thought I'd talk about only one today, and that's a few brief general words about our economy. Don't zone out on me. Most people want to believe that whatever is running our country is really good, and that whatever's going on with the economy is just part of the normal cycles of ups and downs. This is a good time of year to ask whether that's true or whether it looks true. Now, going into too much detail on things like corporate scandals would be, as one of my junior high English teachers used to put it, redundant. Everybody has attacked corporate scandals. Democrats have attacked them. Republicans have attacked them. Business Week has attacked them. And the Wall Street Journal has attacked them. So they're fair game, and it isn't partisan politics. But it's worth remembering just a few of the facts and figures and asking whether the drama that's unfolding in our economy is America at its best or kind of a masked ball being played to our detriment. So let me remind you of things you've all read or heard in the news. Just a few of the highlights from from corporate scandals and the pattern that if you let your focus go soft, you can read in the apple pairing. Global Crossing was a company that lost $47 billion for stockholders through intentional fraud, phony bookkeeping, overlooked by Arthur Andersen. Quest's exceptionally greedy accounting cost stockholders $108 billion. A little bitty one that you'd think would hardly matter. The Harkin Energy Corporation, when George W. Bush was its director, engaged in insider training, trading, and accounting trickery, which was, like so many others, covered up by Arthur Andersen. This was small potatoes. Harkin shareholders lost only around $850 million, not even $1 billion. Halliburton, while Dick Cheney was its CEO, used accounting trickery and Arthur Andersen, and built $22 billion from shareholders. Enron bilked employees and investors out of about $68 billion before declaring bankruptcy. It's completely coincidental that Ken Lay was the biggest personal contributor to the presidential campaign of George W. Bush. Tyco, the business conglomerate which, through exceptionally greedy self-dealing and tax evasion, bilked shareholders of about $100 billion. And WorldCom, the telecommunications company that stole about $191 billion. Over the past 2.5 years, the nation's stock markets have lost over $5.5 trillion. That's about 3 times what our government spends in one entire year. Does this sound like the motives driving our economy come from the best part of America's soul, or does it sound like the forces driving our economy have lost their soul and sound like a masked ball where the dance is carrying us over a cliff? It's worth asking. We're preparing for Halloween, and it's the time to ask those questions because it's the time when the conscious and the unconscious need to get back in touch with each other. Or as they said in the older days, it's a time when ghosts make contact with us to demand reparations for violations of our sacred duties. It is a time, and they are ghosts, worth anticipating. Ambrose Bierce, in his Devil's Dictionary, defines a ghost as the outward and visible sign of an inward fear. One lesson of Halloween and of Samhain is that all of our ghosts are outward and visible signs of inward fears. Now, I've tried in my own small way to honor the ancient traditions of Samhain by unmasking some of the ghosts that haunt our lives and our society by feasting on them, and then by throwing their bones into the bonfire as the outward and visible sign of an inward hope. The bonfire seems important because another secret of Halloween is that ghosts, like vampires, vanish if enough light is shined on them, and that fears, once faced, can be converted into possibilities. Let us confront our fears, secure in the faith that beneath our fears lie unexplored possibilities, even here, even now, even for us. Boo.